please, if you haven't already, fill in the middle seats.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very, very much for coming. This is the, as you can see, DNS Sec for Beginners session. So firstly, thank you for coming and filling up the room. We really appreciate you being here. The aim of the session in the next kind of 90 minutes is a whistle-stop tour of DNS Sec. We want it to be open, want it to be a bit light-hearted and a little bit of fun. We want to try and stay away from too much technical jargon and too many fancy long words. But at the same stage, we want to try and explain DNSSEC. And hopefully, if there are some of you in the audience here who've come for the first time, like, I don't even understand what DNSSEC is, I've been told by my chief exec to attend, or I just want to know a bit more, hopefully this session will be really, really useful. My name is Simon McCallough. I'm from Nominet in the UK. And I'm very honoured to have a group of fantastic speakers and experts here in the room who are going to help out with a whole variety of different styles of presentations. As well as that, we've got some really fantastic folk in the room amongst us from the CCNSO, the GNSO, from SSAC. We're very honoured to have Whit Diffie with us as well. We've got a wealth of experience in implementing DNSSEC. So anyway, on with the show, so to speak. I said I wanted to keep it quite smart and lighthearted. DNSSEC has a whole stack of really complicated words and concepts in it, and I want to avoid all of those today if we can. When we planned this session, we said, well, how do we try and make DNSSEC understandable to all? And we said, well, who would be the toughest audience? And we said, well, actually, if you can make it understandable by a child, you can probably make it understandable to anybody. So we set ourselves the challenge of telling a story of DNSSEC to a kid. So please forgive me for the next 3 or 4 minutes and having a bit of fun with you. I'd like to present a slightly alternate history of DNSSEC from the one you may possibly have read about on Wikipedia or in your books. I'd like to take you back 7,000 years to the edge of the Grand Canyon and to the origins of DNSSEC in 5,000 BC. This is Arguina. She's a cave woman and she lives on the edge of the Grand Canyon. She's a pretty lass. And this is her boyfriend, Og. And he, unfortunately, lives in a cave on the other side of the Grand Canyon. It's a long way down, and it's an awfully long way around. So they don't really get to talk very much. But one of their very, very rare visits, they're sitting around the fire, and they notice the smoke coming out the fire, and they have a bright idea. And soon, they're chatting away using smoke signals. And all is good. The relationship's happy. And they're getting on just fine. Until one day, a mischievous new caveman called Kaminsky moves in next door to Ug. He's a smart guy. So he quite likes Arguina as well. So he starts sending smoke signals to her. And now the poor girl, she's really confused. She doesn't know who to believe. And Kaminsky's having a great time. So what does she do about it? Well, she sets off down the canyon, ties her vines together and climbs down to try and sort out the mess. So Arguina and Ug get together and they consult the wise village elders. And a certain caveman called Diffie thinks he may well have a cunning idea. And in a flash he jumps up and he runs into the back of Ug's cave. And they're like, what is he doing? But at the back of Ug's cave, there's a pile of strange blue sand. And the really amazing thing about this sand is that you can only find this pile of sand in Og's cave. It doesn't exist anywhere else. It's just this one little pile. And he rubs his chin and he thinks, great idea. And he rushes out of the cave and he throws the sand into the fire. And the smoke turns into this amazing blue colour. And now, Arguina and Og are chatting away happily again. And they're safe in the knowledge that Mr. Kaminsky can't interfere with their conversation. And so they're pretty happy with things. And that's it. That's the story of DNSSEC. And that's the amazing thing is, we do, as a technical community, like to talk about zone signing keys, and we like to talk about key rollovers, and a whole load of complicated concepts. And there is some difficult stuff in DNSSEC. But fundamentally, this is the message I want everyone to remember about DNSSEC. It's that blue smoke. It's about colouring the smoke blue, so that you know when you're seeing that smoke over the horizon, you know who sent you that smoke, and you know it hasn't been tampered with. So if you remember one thing from today, just remember that blue smoke. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Matt. He's going to talk to you a little bit about what we're going to try and do in some of the next sessions in the next 90 minutes. So thank you.
That's cool. I feel like I'm getting the applause. So I'm Matt Larson. I'm from VeriSign. I'm here to help. That's usually a laugh line. This is a tough crowd. Simon said, I'm just going to, I have the easiest job today. I'm just going to kind of give a brief introduction to where we're going with this. So the idea for this session, as Simon already said, that if this topic is new to you, it's a brief introduction to the how and why, and you've already seen the beginning of that. And as Simon said, we want to do this without technical jargon. We want to do this in a straightforward way so that, regardless of your background or your previous knowledge about DNSSEC, you'll come away knowing what it's about. And if you do know about DNSSEC, this will serve as a little bit of a refresher, maybe fill in some gaps in your knowledge, and hopefully this will make it easier for you to communicate about DNSSEC to others, to your management, to your friends, your spouse. My wife loves it when I talk about DNSSEC. All right, so the other message that we want to convey is that, DNSSEC is here. You've probably heard over and over again that we signed the root zone back in July, and since then it's really been amazing to see what's happened. We have on the order of 50 top-level domains that are not only signed, but they've sent their information up to the root to have DS records put into the root to get hooked into that DNSSEC chain of trust that starts at the root. And I'm pleased to report, I don't know if the root zone's hit, but .ARPA's DS record is finally in the root. So for those of you who've been waiting for that, that's coming, and that's kind of exciting. So, not only that, but there are tools that exist to help you do this, and we're going to talk about that today. There's plenty of places to get help, and there's definitely a strong community for support. So with all that being said, let me talk briefly about what we're going to have. Joao Damas is going to give sort of an overview of signing and DNSSEC deployment. Then Norm Ritchie is going to talk about the chain of trust, and I won't steal anybody's thunder, but the whole idea of that is that if you trust one person or one thing, and they trust somebody else, and they trust somebody else, and they trust somebody else, you can finally, by following this chain, trust something that you didn't start out trusting. I understand there might be capes involved. Might be. All right. And then Russ Mundy is going to talk about, So you have a domain. What do you do if you want to sort of get into the DNSSEC world? How do you sign your domain? How do you validate other people's signed domains? Sort of an overview of those topics. Roy Ahrens is going to talk to us about this community that I mentioned in the last slide. Where can you go to get help and get support? And then finally, we're going to have an open panel with Q&A from all of us, and we'll just see where the discussion goes from there. So with that, I will turn it over to Joao.
Thank you, Matt. So I'm Joao Damas. I work for ISC, mainly do the software. And my capacity to produce beautiful drawings is nowhere near Simon's. So this is more a standard bullet thing.
Oh, is it off?
No. So I just want to give you a quick overview of what you need to think about when you're trying to do DNSSEC and what it implies in terms of resources once you have decided the way you want to sign, if you decide that you want to sign, which hopefully you will. Digital screens. Okay, so let's. Can you just go on to the next slide? Whoever is driving this thing. Okay, so yeah. Well, basically, what does DNSSEC give you? Compare this to an example that you're probably more familiar with, which is HTTPS, the securing of web communications. When you log into or access some web page that's protected with SSL, so the technology that kind of tries to ensure what's going on with your web connections, you can have two kind of hints at your connection being secure. One is usually a padlock. Basically, what that means is that you got some you talk to the web server on the other side, or your browser did, and it got back a series of information that allowed it to match what the server claimed to be to the name it had that you typed. And if that checks, it says, okay, well, I'll be able to, I think I know who this server is, and I'll now be able to encrypt information. You might additionally get a little green thing somewhere, depends, this varies by browser. What this is telling you is that someone has actually done some checks on the people who got the certificate, the things that allow you to encrypt and identify yourself, to make sure that the person requesting it was authorized to do so. If you only get the padlock here, you are talking to a mail bot that just replied back with the certificate, basically without much checking going on. So in comparison with this, what the DNSSEC does is provide a way to for your communications to know who you are talking to. And the equivalent would be of the green thing, the extra assurance of what's going on here, would be provided by the registrar making some checks to the person who registered the domain. And each registrar will have to decide how they'll perform those checks. Okay, next. So there are some things that are not technical that you have to think about when you're going to do the DNSSEC. And of course, since these are businesses, a lot of time, have to think about cost. And even if you're out of business, you have an unlimited number of resources. So things you have to think about. How big is the zone? If it's small, it's much easier to get things done. You don't have to worry about a lot of the chases you have to take, as I'll show later. If it's bigger, then you have to think things through a little bit better. What's the expected initial uptake? How many people are going to use DNSSEC if you enable it in your zone? That also makes your decision of how to do it different. And where to keep the keys. This is important because if you are going to start signing things so that people believe you, you cannot just leave the keys on top of the table so that anyone can use it. You have to keep them in a little bit more secure place. So let's move on to the next one. Choosing the keys. The actual keys that you're going to use is not a thing that you have to think a lot about. There are examples there. There's documentation out there on the web. Just go through it. Pick the one that the recommendations that are out there. Don't try to be creative in things like this. Where to store the keys depends how much trust you want to put and how much cost is associated with the resources you are trying to assure. There are a range of things where you can put them. Hardware security models, specialized machines that are dedicated to store keys in secure manners. Machines that, like any of you have now, but are kept offline so that they cannot be hacked as easily, usually kept in an office. Or you can just grab a USB key that you carry with you and have the key there. It all depends what you're trying to do then. But it can be very expensive and not so expensive. Whatever you do, and especially if you are a TLD and you have a lot of zones under you, please document and publish your approach. And it's not a hard thing to do. There are models out there. There is a reference there to a document that's published and available, which is a model that you can follow to make your life easier. It has things that you have to think about. checklists that you check and so on. And not, so it should be fairly easy to go along. Oops, okay. this is a PDF, I guess. So there's one thing when you actually want to get this to work in your machine so that your customers see it, that has a fundamental impact in DNSSEC over normal DNS, and that's the signatures. The signatures are very big. How big are they? Normally, if you have a website, a typical record in your DNS zone, you'll have the name, the type of registry, and the IP address for it. That's it. That's the information you have, this little bit here. If you sign it, you start having this plus this. Okay? So automatically it becomes a lot bigger. And then there are a few other things that you have to add which make it even bigger. For people who run DLDs, it's not as bad as it sounds, because as a fundamental property of the protocol, it was defined is that glue, the things that the extra records that you add to the zone, so that people who have their name servers inside their zone, I don't know, Verisign.com has their name servers inside .com, so if you are going through the chain, you need some hints to help you along the way. That kind of information is not signed. And the delegations, that sets of name servers that you point people to for every domain in your zone, are not signed either. So basically, if you are a DLD, and what you have mostly is delegations and glue, you come out of this whole exercise pretty clean. You only have to sign your own zone and the zones that the links to the web of trust that we'll talk about later for your customers that choose to use. There is a little complication on all of this. When DNSSEC was invented, it was meant to prove that something existed and that information you were sending someone else was the right one. But it also was required to prove when something didn't exist. And that's a little bit trickier because you don't know what the question is going to be, what some client is going to be asking you, because the number of things that don't exist is much bigger than this, the number of things that do exist in any given DNS name. So this was put in as a condition that the protocol had to fulfill. At the time, and the DNSSEC has taken a little bit while to go and become standardized, there was this requirement that the answers had to be pre-computed. You couldn't just be there sitting waiting for someone to come and ask you a question that didn't exist and try to, in a few milliseconds, put together an answer that was credible, send it back. So it had to be pre-computed. What happened then? This thing called NSSEC, in previous iterations it had a different name, was invented. So what it does, imagine you have a zone that has A.com and C.com. Imagine that's all the .com zone. Okay? So you have A and C. And someone comes in and asks for B.com. And that doesn't exist. So what you do is you tell the customer, the client, back something like this. We're using this record. You go back in the zone to the first name that existed, in this case, A.com. And you say, hi. That doesn't exist, and the way I'm proving it is I'm giving you this thing that pertains to A.com, and I'm saying here that the next thing that exists is C.com, and from that you have to figure out that B doesn't exist, because if there is nothing in between A and C, then it follows that B doesn't exist, and you sign that. So that you can do before. The little problem with this thing is that for every pair of names, you cover the hole in between them, and there will always be a hole between any two given names, right? Because you can just add something to the end of the previous name and you create a new one. So between any two names, there will always be a hole. So you have to create one of these NSSEC records for each domain that exists to prove that the ones in between them exist. This automatically duplicates the zone. You also have to sign this thing, and this has a kind of a bit of a chain effect that leads to this problem. If that's a problem, which it is not for a small zone, then you have another option, which is called NSSEC 3, which, as I say here, stands for you lose some and you gain some. This was a record that was created with an official excuse, privacy. People were afraid that this NSEC record, because it tells you, for any question you ask, it tells you two domains, the one before and the one after, that the people could use this to hop the zone and get an enumeration of the whole contents of the zone. And then they would use this zone and hammer the Huey server to extract information for spamming. So this was seen by some as a problem. If the problem is in the Huey's, most likely, DNS, as always, is the one that gets hit. And then there is a real benefit, the reason why this was actually done, which is called opt-out. This allows you to mark a domain to say, from here until you see another one of these records, there's nothing. I'm not going to sign anything. I'm not going to generate any of these records. Just you are on your own like you were before using DNSSEC. I'll sign the ones that people have asked me to sign, but everything in between, let's just pretend they are not there. So in a allegation-heavy zone, this decreases the size of the zone a lot, because you don't have to generate one record for every other record that existed already, even if people are not using it, which is most normally the case when you start things up. Most zones that have implemented DNSSEC only have a few DNSSEC subdomains right now, which is normal at the beginning. So this actually makes the deployment much easier, because the amount of resources is much less than in the other option. Put here an example. .org, which is a fairly big zone, has a lot of records in it. Out of 8 million domain names, it has probably 16, 18 million records in it. Actually only has 5,000 NSEC 3 records in it, which makes the problem much more tractable. And then some of them we could claim shouldn't even be there. But what makes it feasible. It makes it, you can deploy this stuff without increasing your costs a bit through the roof. What do you lose? As I said before, well, you lose the capacity to prove that things don't exist when they don't exist. Other things you need to keep about, this is more of a checklist. I hope your technical guys, when they look at DNSSEC, will go through similar things like this. A very typical one, unlike DNS before DNSSEC, which was valid for eternity, DNSSEC signatures have a day when they start becoming valid and the day when they stop becoming valid. And they'll stop becoming valid when that date comes if you don't refresh them. So some people have fallen into that problem. Even people who know what they are doing, it just happens. So it's one thing to be careful about. And the others are just provisioning things. And of course, don't forget about the registry, because this only protects you. Some people have called DNSSEC just expensive error correction. What it prevents is there being errors or manipulations between the DNS message exiting your server and arriving at the endpoint. If what you put in your database is crap, what comes up is signed crap. It doesn't make it any better. So it's fundamental to not forget about that point. And I think that's all. Go through the checklist. There's a lot of information out there. It's not as scary as it thinks. The biggest problems, which were the capacity-related ones, have been solved with that second option. So go through it. It's not difficult.
Thank you. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Who's next?
Next up, we have Norm, and I suspect some theatrics coming up.
On. Yep. Okay, we're going to try something a bit different here.
I'm Canadian.
Sorry, I'm Canadian. This is a senator's hat. It's kind of covered up. Right now, I'm Joe User. And if you never put on ball cap, off, on, lock. I'm going to ask my cast of characters to come up, and we're going to have a very distinguished technically cast of characters, and we're going to see how good they do acting. So we're going to do there's four acts to this play. They're all very short. And what we'll do is just show a normal DNS transaction. We're going to use paper rather than using anything electronic. It's a bit slower, but we will, you know, show you how it goes through a typical lookup. And then we'll look at a man-in-the-middle attack. And then we will sign, and then we'll redo it. So, if I can get you guys to line up in the right spots, Mr. ISP. Okay, the authorities should be over there. Yeah. I'll be... No, you're an authority. You're over there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg.
You're going to be in the middle. You're in the middle.
Okay.
Oops. That's fine. Yeah, exactly. So, we got the little names on our hats. I don't know if you can see it. I'm Joe User. We have Mr. ISP, who I connect through. And we have at the far end, we have The Root, and then .com, and then Big Bank Incorporated. So, I'm going to start off. They tap, 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 tap. I'm sitting down now. I have to explain what I'm doing. Sit down. And I'm going to do some online banking. So, I'm going to type in www.bigbank.com.
Mike, I'm Roy. So, I'm going to pass, right, the question for this name over to The Root. Why? It's because I don't have that information on me. It's nowhere. So, it's out of my cash. So, I'm going to ask The Root. Hi, Root.
Hey, Mr. ISP. How you doing?
I'm Phil. Doing well, thank you.
Very good. Well, I don't know where Big Bank is, but I'll tell you what, I do know where .com is.
That's helpful.
So, you... I give you, is it 1.1.1.1?
Okay, 1.1.1. Dot one. That's DNS, not IP address. Hello.com. I have a question for www.bigbank.com. Do you have the answer for me?
Hello, ISP. Nice to see you. You don't come very often. I'm happy to see you. But I don't have any proper answer for you, but I know that Big Ben has more information about that name, so go to IP address 2.2.2.2 and ask for more.
Okay. Okay, so, hi BigBank.com.
Hello.
I'm looking for www.BigBank.com.
Came to the right place. That's 1234. That's the address. I'll take the commissions now.
Thank you. So now I found that www.bigbank.com is at IP address 1234, right? Thanks to all these guys, I can now give the information back to my customer, Joe User. Hi, Joe. Here's your answer.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome. Now I can go pay all my bills. I'm so happy. Yeah. And away it goes. So that's a typical DNS transaction. The interesting things here that we're just trying to demonstrate concepts, no technical stuff. There's publishers of DNS data, the authorities. There's Recursor, the ISP, who consumes that data. And the Joe User usually gets that information from the ISP. But the important thing here is that the interaction that happened between the ISP and the authorities, the publishers of the data. On to scene two. Okay, now we're going to redo this. This is scene two called Joe Gets Scammed. Enter Dr. Evil. So, we're going to redo the same scenario and show the man in the middle attack. So, here I go, do my banking again. More bills. Tap, 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 tap. Ah, www.bigbank.com.
www.bigbank.com. I don't know what it is, so let's start at The Root. Hi, Root. I'm looking for www.bigbank.com. Yeah, 5 seconds, that's correct. do you have that information for me?
Hey, ISP, how you doing? You've had your hair done since I last saw you. I like the new grey you got, it's good. Hey, I don't know where Big Bank is, but I can tell you where .com is. It's at 1.1.1.1.
Perfect. So .com is at 1.1.1.1. Hopefully, it has some more information for me. Hi, you must be living at 1.1.1.1. You are .com. Do you have more information for me where I can find www.bigbank.com?
Hi, SP. Nice to see you again. I don't know exactly where www.bigbank.com is, but I think that there is more information at Big Bank name server, which has address 2.2.2.2. So go there.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Jay Daly. Dr. Evil. So, I'm here at 2.2.2.2. I'm looking for www.bigbank.com. You must know the answer. www.bigbank.com.
Yes, I do. Hello. Nice to see you again. I'm bigbank.com, and the address is www.bigbank.com is at 6.6.6.6.
Perfect. Thank you. Just what I needed to know. Okay. So, I missed a customer. Just in time, within that 5 seconds, I've got the answer for you. www.bigbank.com is at 6.6.6.6.
Awesome. Now I can go do my banking and pay all my bills and put all my credentials into the bank. So, thank you very much. So, what happened there? So, the man in the middle of the attack is really just an injection of a miscreant server, injecting information in before the response got from Big Bank Inc. back to the ISP. Dr. Evil injected himself and spoofed it. Mr. ISP was very happy to receive that information, happily pass it along to me and cash it. Are you asking questions or? Yeah. There you go. Okay. Okay. Now. The next act of this thing is our hero arrives, DNSSEC. So, what's going to happen now? Dr. Evil's getting out of here. The authorities are going to exchange information and form a chain of trust. Now, if you know the way DNSSEC works, would be possible to have www.bigbank.com be signed, and Mr. ISP could keep a list of those and every other gazillion domain like that. That's not very efficient. So, what they do is form a chain of trust. And so they will share credentials with each other. So the parent knows the child. So okay. And the just so you know, and then we heard the thing about the root signing ceremony and stuff. There's no one to actually validate for the roots. That's what all that root signing ceremony was about, and the other things. Okay, so now we are now DNS. Yeah. So now we're going to reuse these for something else because times are tough. Okay, so now we're DNSSEC enabled, fully deployed. Woohoo! So we actually beat VeriSign signing this. So, fourth act, DNSSEC saves the day. So, we're going to redo the man in the middle attack, this time with the DNSSEC enabled query chain. Back to Joe User. Okay, more bills to pay. Tap, 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 tap. www.bigbank.com, and don't screw it up because I lost all my money last time.
Okay, I have the credentials for the root. I'll go to the root. Hello, Mr. Root. Do you have www.bigbank.com for me?
Hey, Mr. ISP. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
You really should use Grecian, you know.
4 seconds.
So, things have moved a long way. In 7,000 years of R&D, we've moved from blue sand to a blue bow. I'm going to sign the response. And I'm going to tell you, I don't know where Big Bank is, but I do know where .com is. It's at 1.1.1.1.
thank you for that information, but I'm first going to check that. Hey, there's your signature, a blue bowl on it. I recognize that blue bowl, and now I know that your reference to .com at 1.1.1.1 is the correct one. Hello, .com. Do you have www.bigbank.com for me?
Hello. I don't have that information, but I know about somebody who knows more. And because he put credentials to my zone, I will sign on the response that you know to the right guys. And here we are.
Thank you, but before I'm going to go to bigbank.com, I'm going to check that. www.bigbank.com, you send me a reference. I can see that you speak correctly because you have been trusted by your parents. It could actually be your parents. Anyway, I'm getting there. I'm now going to bigbank.com. Hello, bigbank.com. Do you have www.bigbank.com for me?
Hello, ISP. This is bigbank.com. You can trust me. The IP address you want is 6.6.6.6.
Thank you very much. But before I'm going to go there, I'm going to check that information. Right? How can I check that information? There is no bowl here. There is no signature there. So, let's just ask again. Ah, there it is. There is www.bigbank.com with a signature, right? And I can now have all these three signatures. I can check the chain of trust all the way up to the root, and Dr. Evil has no chance. Oh. And of course, now that I've checked everything, I can tell Joe User that www.bigbank.com lives at, where it lives at, 3.3.3.3. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, thank you, Mr. ISP, and now I can securely pay my bills at the bank. Thank you very much. So, that was a fun way of just showing how this works. Big cheers to these guys for doing this, because these are like some of the technical giants in DNS, and this is pretty cool. A question? Man in the middle attack?
And excuse me, thank you very much, but when you do ask questions, if you could either ask for a mic, or if you're at a mic, please use the mic. No problem.
Okay. My name is Mary and .ng. I'm saying at the point of attack, there's an attack on the DNS. So whom will Joe, right?
The user, end user.
The end user who is responsible. Thank you.
Who is the end user going to pin the responsibility on? For failing to provide the correct information.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only contract they have. They have. He's his customer. He is responsible. He may then go ask someone else. But.
Yes. The idea is that Joe actually doesn't talk to these guys. Joe talks to me. So I'm the only one who can give him the information. Now, if I don't check, right, Joe's going to be victimized. Terribly victimized, but victimized.
Again. Oh, okay. Any other question? One?
No, I have to admit, I found this demonstration unpersuasive because intruder attacks normally depend on being seize control of the communication channel. And this demonstration didn't show exactly why, at the moment Dr. Evil appeared, he was able to get hold of the communication channel and divert the communication from Big Bank Lookup, or whatever that was, to himself.
Yeah.
And why couldn't it have occurred at the root or any of the other play or at the ISP, right? So, I mean, I think that's the key point that makes this a DNS thing. There are lots of meat in the middle, lots of person in the middle schemes.
Yeah, we've very much simplified. Oh, one more question.
From the point of the end user, what am I supposed to do now? Sign a contract with an ISP who guarantees the DNSSEC information chain, or what is in my responsibility?
I think one thing that's really good for end users to do is actually talk to your ISPs and ask them what their plans are for deploying DNSSEC, and recursing through DNSSEC, and talk to your registries and ask them if they haven't already, ask them what they're doing. I think end user pressure is, a good thing to further get further deployment. And if you have one, if you have an ISP that is enabling DNSSEC queries, validating queries, and another one's not, you might want to switch providers. But ask them. If they get questions from their consumers coming in, then they're going to take more interest. A big bow. Oh, sorry, one more question. Was there one? No? No.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you.
So next up we have Russ Mundy, who is from Cobham Solutions, and he's going to be talking about where to go if you want to start thinking about implementing DNSSEC, what tools and technologies you can use. Thanks, Russ.
Thanks. Well, and I hope I can provide a little more information to supplement some of the questions that were asked last time. And so let's jump right into this here. And the basic thing that you'll hear me probably say more times than you'll get tired of hearing it, DNS is all about content. It's the content that matters. The thing that we're trying to do with DNSSEC is make sure you get the right content and you can tell. And when you go and start making use of DNSSEC, the thing you need to remember is DNSSEC protects content, and it makes the content more clearly correct for the users of your information. And most of this presentation, I'll be trying to keep the orientation of, I'm a name owner, I have somebody or myself operating name servers for me, but I also do other things with DNS. But the most important thing as the owner of names in DNS is that your content for your zone gets to the people that want to use it correctly. What I've tried to draw here is a picture that shows a whole batch of everybody and everything from sort of beginning to end. The content, as someone who registers the name with a registrar, in theory, the content all starts there. The provisioning side goes through registrars to registries, and then at the point of this triangle is where the name servers and the registries come together, and the people that operate on the on-the-wire things are on the right-hand side, with your eventual users being people running applications in computers somewhere on the internet. You, as the owner of a name, have no idea where your users sit most of the time. For the specifications part of DNSSEC, it's mostly on the right-hand side of this triangle. For the real-world usage of DNS security, you need to worry about both sides of the triangle, both getting your information into the DNSSEC, into the DNS, having it securable with DNSSEC,
and having it validated by end users. So you saw in the last presentation that there's quite a few name servers out there. And Whit brought the point up that there could be any place along here, any one of these name servers at any level in the DNS hierarchy can have an attack waged against it where someone introduces incorrect answers or falsified information. So if you think that you have a nice, simple little website, maybe you're, you know, somebody that's just a small operation just getting started and you're here at the ICANN meeting to learn what you can learn about DNS and so forth, you can say, I don't have all that many names and DNS usages on my website. Here's a nice, simple website that we operate and provide our tools from that has really very few links on the page, but this picture shows how many DNS queries and answers it takes from some user resolver trying to get this answer, okay? There's a whole lot of DNS queries and answers. And when there is an attack against the DNS, it can be waged against any place in this set of pictures. Now, when you get a little more complicated, like CNN.com, there's a lot of queries on that page. So I'm the owner of a name server, owner of a name. I have somebody operating it. So what do I do about it? Well, the first thing you want to do is look at what are the facilities available to you to do DNSSEC for your name in the name server infrastructure that you already have. Good news is there's lots of name servers that today do support DNS security. Not everything does. There's a number of commercial products. There's a lot of open source products. We keep a survey that you'll see this URL a couple times. I don't guarantee that it's 100% up to date because the good news is there's so much happening and it's coming out so quickly, we aren't always able to keep the survey up to date, and we've transformed it into a wiki format so people can actually update their own information now if they want to. Not so good news, well, not everybody does have DNSSEC support in their products. And some that have DNSSEC support only support a subset of the DNSSEC functions. So here's a set of the open source vendors that, frankly, constitute the largest proportion of name servers that are out there in use in the open source world as large authoritative name servers. So if you are going to sign your zone, whether you're using those or some commercial products, and there are commercial products available to do that also, you should also think about doing validation in your infrastructure where you are operating a name server resolver, getting answers to queries, whether you're an enterprise, whether you're an ISP, or something else. And if you don't operate it yourself, go to your vendor and tell them that you want to see them doing DNSSEC validation of all of your DNS queries so you don't get spoofed by Dr. Evil. So the other thing that you need to think about doing is making use of, DNSSEC applications. Now, there's not a lot of DNSSEC applications that go clear out to the end users, but there certainly are some, and there's more being done all the time. There's, again, in the survey that we have, a number of applications that are pointed to. There's new toolkits coming out. Dan Kaminsky was referenced in the Caveman demo. He and some of the folks he works with have recently brought out a toolkit called Freebird that does several things. You can think of it as a DNSSEC proxy kind of functionality. So it's intended to facilitate and lower costs of doing DNS security. So there's a lot of people coming out with new ideas and new capabilities to do DNSSEC. Now, next thing I want to show you is some examples of DNSSEC-aware applications to show that they do exist. And one of my favorite ones is Firefox with DNSSEC. And if anybody wants to see it for real, it's the browser that I use for most of my stuff. It's sitting over there on my Mac. And let's see, that's, yeah, that may be a screenshot from my Mac or somebody else's. But anyway, it's available as part of our toolkit. Another one of the applications is Thunderbird. Let's go ahead and click on through. And this is perhaps my favorite. This is a Nokia N900. That's an application that runs on my phone that does DNSSEC. So this is a very, very quick run-through of what exists, what you can do, some of the exciting new developments that are coming. And I want to, at this point, just bring it to a close unless there's some specific questions for me. We are going to do the panel at the end. So, okay, thank you.
Thanks, Russ. That's fantastic. Now, please welcome Roy Ahrens, who's also from Nonet. He's going to come and talk to you about where to go to get some help. If you're interested in what you've seen, you want to find out more, where do you start looking?
So my name is Roy Ahrens. I work for Nonet. I've been involved in DNSSEC for a while now. I'm going to basically talk to you about the stuff that I use to get my information from. And if you can go to the next slide, please. Thank you. For instance, there are a lot of mailing lists out there, but the most interesting ones, the one that has real technical content, are dnssec-deployment@dnssec-deployment.org, dnsop@itf.org, and dns-operations@lists.dns-org.org. Now, of course, these are very long strings. These slides are available after the session, so you can just copy it from here. Next thing I want to do, if you can go to the next slide. Next thing I want to do is I want to point out some people here that can actually help you with deploying DNSSEC. People that have done this for a long time, people who understand what the problem is. I didn't feel that comfortable before asking them to put their names on the slides, so I just put mine there. My name is roy@dnss.ec. If any questions, anything at all, just send me an email. I'll help you out. I'll point you forward. The same goes for Simon McKellar, also at nominet.org.uk. ISC actually has a stand here, a small booth just around the corner downstairs. ISC does a lot of good work in DNSSEC. ISC are the builders of Bind 9, Bind 10, Bind 8, and Bind 4 as well. Joao is here. Joao can help you out. Joao knows everything about DNSSEC that anyone needs to know. There are a few others here as well. There is Matt Larson. He sits over there. Matt Larson from VeriSign. He understands DNSSEC pretty well. He's one of the authors of the DNSSEC standards. He knows pretty good what's going on at VeriSign, of course, so he's able to help you out. And these people, you can just send them an email. We can speak on various levels, very deep technical, operational. Personally, I'm not so good in the marketing part of it. We have other people who are willing to do that. I'm going to do a small session here. There's Jim Galvin, points his head up. Oh, okay. Yes. So there's Jim Galvin from Affilius, also done a lot of DNSSEC deployments. There's Andre Suri from from .cz, also deployed DNSSEC. And they have a booth too. So anyone who is able to help out, that's half of the people I need right now, raise up your hand, right? So that's Russ Mundy, that's Rickard Belgrim, that's Fred, Frederico Neves from .br. Oh, Paul Wouters, yes, a fellow Dutchman, yes. So he's able to help out. Now, I'm going to collect all these names afterwards. I'm going to add them to this slide set, right? So you have reference, we have real people that will actually really respond to you with your questions. And it doesn't matter if it's a beginner's question, it doesn't matter if it's an advanced question. I can see Chris Wright over there. Chris Wright from Oz Registry knows a lot about DNSSEC. Can also tell you about DNSSEC. He actually has a very good registrar perspective. So it's not always a positive. How do you call it? It's not always a positive in terms of DNSSEC is there. He can deploy it. If you are a registrar and you have some concerns, Chris Wright is able to help you out there. There's one other thing that I can mention, and that is OpenDNSSEC. Next slide, please. So at OpenDNSSEC, there's basically a collaboration with a few top-level domains and various other people. So that's Nominet, there's SIDN, there's IIS, NLNet Labs. NLNet Labs built NSD and Unbound. They have built a DNS key management tool, which is basically you install it, right? It is you install it, you configure it, you basically walk away. That's what OpenDNSSEC does for you. It is basically what SSH did to Telnet, what HTTPS did to HTTP. That's what OpenDNSSEC is supposed to do. So, with that, I'm going to leave it to the next person. Thank you. If you have any questions, feel free to address me now, address me afterwards. You have my email address. I'm going to be around here all week. Thank you.
Thanks, Roy. Just also a quick sales pitch. Obviously, hopefully most of you know of the day-long session we have on DNSSEC on Wednesday in the main auditorium. And obviously, there's going to be a lot more in-depth discussion about some of these topics. Some of the folk you've seen here today will also be talking in-depth, and there'll be some longer panel sessions to address some of those challenges, exactly about who, for example, whose responsibility it is it, how do we market DNSSEC, some of those stuff. So please do come to that session, and it's a whole day-long session, and there will be a lot more folk there too. So just to add that in, it's on the ICANN agenda if you want to look for that. Andre, do you want to come and join? We're going to have a brief panel Q&A session now, if folk have got questions. Andre, do you want to... Andre's going to chair that, so you're going to come to the front. That'd be great.
So thank you very much. The next topic is to have a Q&A panel, and I was asked to chair the session, or to chair the panel, but I hope my role will be more ceremonial, that you will have a lot of questions, and I will just, you know, point on you if you would like to raise a question. So there is no topic, it's a completely open panel, so if you want to start with some question, it's time now. Okay, that I expected. I don't see any. So I have a first question, and I would like to a little bit work on Sandra's point. She asked, what should end user do if he or she wants to have ISP with validating DNSSEC resolver? That's a good point. But another question, is there any way how to detect that the ISP is doing DNSSEC validation?
Well, from a technical perspective, it's not easy for an end user, but the reality is the most important thing from an end user perspective is to get some demand in front of that provider. The more people that ask for DNSSEC, the more they're going to pay attention. And even if they think they're the only one or two, talk to their friends and neighbors. Literally, if you're an individual in a home, and try to get effectively a community support started, because you tend to have a very, very small number of ISPs available to homes. And if you get some grouping, you know, even five or six people of a single customer provider, it'll get some attention.
I don't see. Oh, Sandra has.
following this question, which was just explained now, thank you for this. I'd like to ask if my ISP did sign up or is trying to run the DNISSEC. Is the .com and the root server, are they doing as well, or could there be a gap?
Well, there's really two sides of this. There's what the authoritative servers do, like the root and .com and .net, and then there's what the recursive name servers do at your ISP or at an enterprise. And both of those pieces need to be working for DNSSEC to work completely. So, you know, what you've heard us talk about is that the root was signed. .net's actually going to be signed Thursday. .com will be signed late in Q1. You know, we have many other TLDs signed. So on the authoritative side, you know, things are going very well with high levels, important pieces of the infrastructure being signed. But then on the recursive name server side, which you as a user would want to be most concerned with, that's where we need a little more uptake. In the U.S., one of the largest ISPs, Comcast, has announced that they're moving to DNSSEC. If they haven't already done so, they have turned on DNSSEC validation everywhere. So at least in the U.S., that sets a very good example. But we're still in the early days of ISPs, you know, making the decision. At some point, I think, as Russ said, if the demand is sufficient, or if enough of their competitors start turning on validation, you know, I think we could see the pace of that increase as ISPs realize, okay, I'm being left behind. All my competitors are doing validation. Some of my customers are asking for it. I guess I need to turn it on.
Just wanted to follow on from Matt's point. I think we'll see a tipping point fairly shortly, where particularly when the banks start to request DNSSEC and they start to sign themselves, where we'll go from a point where it's kind of like a few folks signing and a few folks getting ready for DNSSEC to suddenly everybody wants it and everybody needs to get it in pretty quickly. And it'll become a competitive disadvantage to not be DNSSEC enabled, rather than at the moment, should we, shouldn't we? So I think we'll see that tipping point. I don't know when that will be. Heaven help us if we have an incident that means everybody else suddenly feels the need to sign, but something's going to create that tipping point where I think we'll see a much greater take-up.
To that, I mean, all parties have to participate in this, and I like to cite, when this comes up, I like to cite the example of Brazil, where they, which shows what the registry can do to help with deployment. In Brazil, they created this .b.br domain, dedicated to banks. Only banks can register there, and if they do register, they have to have DNSSEC enabled. It's a condition. With the right marketing, that became like a brand that the banks just had to go to. They couldn't just not do it. So that has an immense impact. And I think that can be done elsewhere, and similar examples can be done elsewhere.
Any other questions? Okay.
So I understand that the resolver is responsible for validation of responses that come back. What does the resolver pass to the client in such a way that I can tell that I'm not getting a response because I have an invalid response as opposed to the server's down? Do I get some kind of notification, intelligent notification back? Roy?
Currently, the channel between the ISP and the client is unprotected. The information that you get back as a client from the ISP is basically UDP, right? It's not checked. In that unprotected channel, there's one bit that is set, and if that one bit is set, it means the answer has been validated. But of course, if the channel is not protected, it doesn't bring you anything. So that's what we call protecting the last mile. That's another step that also has to be done.
I think it's actually more prudent to get DNSSEC validation as close to the consumer as possible, preferably in the application itself. And the second best thing within the operating system itself, instead of depending on the ISP. The ISP is just currently the most interesting part to address, because there are a lot less ISPs than there are consumers. So.
And I think Ray's last point there was really key, that right now, to get more validation being done, it's easier to focus on places where this stuff happens a lot in a concentrated manner, which is ISPs. But as you saw from some of the examples on my slides and literally on my phone, you can do validation right at the end application. Eventually, I think most people that have been involved with DNSSEC for some length of time, eventually people envision that that is the best place to actually validate the information, although it's not a totally settled question. Some people still think it's better off to do most of the heavier computing a little further out, like at the recursive name server, and protect that last channel. But the important thing now is that people start thinking about this and start actually doing and making use of the capabilities that do exist. And I also want to say that most of the applications today that exist that do DNSSEC validation are open source. So you can take and use them or modify them or do whatever you choose to do if you want to do other exciting experimental things too.
So not to completely beat this topic into the ground, but I think there is value in having validation done on the recursive servers, you know, where we are today. I mean, I think there's unquestionably value. One of the things I like to say is DNSSEC doesn't ensure that you get the right answer. That's not what it was designed to do. But it does ensure that you won't get the wrong answer. So if validation is turned on the recursive name servers, you know, even though we have this last mile issue, which is, you know, work we still have to do in the engineering community, you at least, if you've got DNSSEC validation enabled on the recursive name servers, you know that there's sort of a firewall protecting spoofed responses from getting back to you.
Any other question? If not, I will maybe continue a little bit about the point you raised about the validation at the end user side. You know, I come from Czech Republic. We have about 100,000 signed domain names, the biggest number in the world. And that's why, and we are thinking about moving from the validation at ISP side to validation at resolver side. And so we created some pages, dnssectester.cz, where you can test whether your environment, whole network, resolvers are able to transfer DNSSEC message. And what we faced is that there are some end user equipment that is somehow crippling DNS queries and then do not transfer those DNS responses. So what is your experience on that, and do you think it's better to start DNSSEC validation on ISP side, or would you like to have it on end user side soon, immediately, or what do you think will happen?
Well, as a person that walks around with a DNSSEC validator on his end machine, I do periodically and with a good deal of regularity find places where my DNS fails, okay, because of exactly those characteristics. A number of us have been directly a part of what's called the DNSSEC initiative for a number of years, and one of the things that we're currently looking at extending this workspace into examining is a way to not only test, but to try to figure out what is an appropriate response if you encounter such a thing. So there will be, for some length of time, because there's a lot of hardware and software in existence, especially associated with hotels, other public kind of environments, that by its design is very restrictive and in fact won't support DNSSEC. So for now, if you're trying to operate in that environment, you will not get DNSSEC service of any kind, because their resolvers are not doing it either, and you can't run yours through them. So you have to raise demand again.
at Nominet we did some we did a very rigorous, a very extensive test on various end user equipment, various how do you call them, basically DSL modems and stuff, consumer grade equipment, and what we found that in general things were compliant, but if you do something specific, like when a message is too large, then responses don't get through. When certain bits of a message has been set, right, and some servers do that, some authoritative servers do that, then a message doesn't get through. So we have a report available on that. It's quite extensive. It's also published in as an SAC report within ICANN. And it basically tells you, it lists the equipment that do not qualify, and it also lists the equipment that does qualify.
Regarding this, should the regulation be done at the end site or at the resolver? You have to remember, I mean, all these attacks are carried out by people who have an economical interest in the end. It's not just people being annoying, it's people trying to divert you to collect your money, basically. So even though it would be ideal to have the end user be doing the validation, we are not quite there yet, the attackers are going to be concentrating their attacks on places where they have bigger impact. And that's the recursive servers at the ISPs, right? If you can misguide a recursive server of an ISP that has a million customers, then you have owned a million customers for the same price. If you have to go one end user at a time, then your cost increases and your profit goes down. So people are going to start attacking the recursive name servers. That's why I personally think that's the primary focus right now. If then it later on it becomes commodity to have this software that enables the end user to do the stuff themselves, so much the better. But attacks, as we have seen so far, will be concentrated on the recursive.
Okay. No question from audience. If another, oh, there's one. He's going to repeat the question.
Excuse me. just to add to what he's asking. We have small registry, and we have registrars, and I don't know whether the big registries you've asked your registrars to be DNS compliant or to deploy DNSSEC. Just as he asked the registry, do we ask our registrars, to compulsorily deploy DNSSEC? And is it expensive for the registrars to do that?
Okay. Obviously, I'm not a registrar, I'm a registry, so I hope I can answer this question. Some of you people here who have deployed DNSSEC are registrars who can probably better answer this question. If you feel so, speak up. For now, I will try to answer both of your questions. So what does a registrar need to do to deploy DNSSEC? First off, the bulk of the registrars that I know actually host the zones for their clients. There are only a very few organizations out there that actually only allocate a name at the registrar and host the DNS themselves. So what the registrar in principle needs to do to be DNSSEC compliant, for what it actually means, is to first be able to sign the zones that they host for third parties. The second thing is to get agreement with that third parties that they are actually allowed to sign their third party zone. And then there's the communication channel between the registrar and the registry. There is a protocol out there that's called EPP, a lot of registries use to talk to the registrars, and there's an extension to EPP that allows you allows registries to accept DS records from registrars. And a DS record is a typical chain of trust that you need. So if a registrar can do all these things, right,
then it's basically, in my point of view, compliant. That's actually your question. To ask your question about the terms of cost, most of the registrars, if not all, are commercial organizations. There are very, very few, and I know only of one, not-for-profit registrar. So that basically means that every cost that are incurred on the registrar need to be explained to either the shareholders or to the owner of the company, but there's a bottom line, right? That's why it's a commercial company. So there are a lot of hidden costs for a registrar that they need to do. They need to upgrade their systems if they can't do DNSSEC yet, right? They need to provide a web interface or provide some interface to third parties who want to do their own signing. There's a whole list of things that a registrar needs to do, and I can of course easily say the bare minimum that it needs to do, but that's just not fair, because a registrar is the first point of contact to a customer. So there's a fair amount of things that a registrar needs to do. Yeah.
So I can talk a little bit about this from VeriSign's perspective with regard to ICANN accredited registrars. You know, we're going to a great deal of effort to sign .net and .com, and we want all that effort to you know, to be successful. We want to induce registrars to support DNSSEC, and you know, we want to see the whole effort be successful. So to that end, you know, Roy gave a good list of the things that a registrar has to do to become DNSSEC enabled, and VeriSign is doing some of those things to make it easier. You know, we have a software development kit for EPP, an EPP SDK in both Java and C++, and we've added support for the DNSSEC extensions to that. So you can kind of get that for free. We've got a white paper on if you're hosting zones, what open source tools could you use to sign your zones, and we've got also a cloud signing service that we just introduced. I'm sorry, I don't mean to have this sound like a sales pitch. It's more I'm trying to list the various tools that are available to ICANN accredited registrars. So, you know, this cloud signing service, and there are other things like it, would let a registrar sort of outsource the idea of signing. They send their hosted zones to the cloud, they get signed, and they come back. So I guess the overriding point of my comment is that there are resources to ICANN accredited registrars to make this process easier to become DNSSEC enabled.
Just a point I think worth adding is, you know, we have the fantastic benefit of being an industry that is largely self-regulated and has enjoyed the freedom and the growth of that. And as, you know, as part of our remit is to try and make sure that the DNS that we provide is as safe and secure as possible. So it absolutely has got to be a commercial case for DNSSEC. But we've also got to have in the back of our minds, that are we doing the right thing as an industry in protecting the end consumer and making that internet safe and secure? Because it's not something that's going to go away. There is a flaw in the DNS, and DNSSEC patches that flaw. And at some point, we're all going to have to consider the case, whether it's a business case or whether it's a public purpose case for implementing DNSSEC. So absolutely recognize the right for people to say, got to put a good business case in front of my board or my chief exec. But I'll just ask people to have that little bird on their shoulder saying to them, are we doing the right thing for internet users as a whole?
One thing I'd like to add into this discussion so far is many people have a model of which thing, what things a registrar is doing and is not doing. One thing I found out couple years ago is when we're talking ICANN accredited registrars, it's actually a fairly narrow set of things that they are required to do as an ICANN accredited registrar, and that does not include operating name servers. The reality is most of them do it, and they do it for the convenience of their customers and to help their business, but that's not something that's actually required. They're also similarly not required to be in the business of signing DNSSEC things. So some of the things like Matt has mentioned, where there are other entrepreneurial activities that are offering services, on as long as it's a trustworthy service that somebody looks at and makes a reasoned business decision, the fact that your registrar may not have a DNS name server infrastructure that supports DNSSEC doesn't mean that you can't still get a DNSSEC capability put in place through using some of these other things.
Yeah, Wolfgang Nagel, RIPE NCC. What Roy just mentioned before is sort of like the standard that we want to get to in hopefully a short time. However, I'd like to point out that to support DNSSEC to a certain degree, it's not necessary to go to the full length yet, because a lot of registrars actually have customers that are willing to do and want to do DNSSEC, but those are actually, especially those customers that are not hosted at the registrar side. And to enable those customers, you usually do not have to invest a lot of money or effort. Like Matt mentioned, the SDKs that VeriSign is offering allow you to basically just supply the DS records directly to the registry, and that's about all you have to do for those customers. And that's actually a quite low barrier and kind of the first thing to go to.
Yeah, that's more like a comment than a question, right? So,
business cases are usually set up into two. There's why we should and why we shouldn't. And I think DNSSEC is getting to the point now where the business case will be why shouldn't we do it. So I think you'll see things turning where a bank, I go to the bank and they say on the list.com is signed, why bother? So when that's all signed, it's going to be the CEO is going to call those people and go, why aren't we doing it? So I think that's going to tip and it's going to go in the favor of getting it done. It's not that expensive, it's just taking a will.
Okay, we have 5 more minutes. If there's no question, maybe I would raise one maybe for all of you. We are discussing now deployment of DNSSEC worldwide, but I'm not sure what that means exactly. So my question is, what is your prediction for the future? What do you think will happen in a long and short term? And what would you personally expect as a complete DNS deployment worldwide? Is it in number of TLDs that use DNSSEC? Is it a percentage of ISPs resolvers that are validating, or is it the number of domains? What do you think, and what do you feel is the world DNS deployment?
Personally, what I feel as a success is that at one point in time, some domain is singled out as amazing. It's not signed. So yeah, I mean, I know it's currently a little bit of a fairy tale. Hopefully, in the future, we get there. For me personally, for instance, for Co.UK, which we're going to do in March, the signing of the second level domain set of under UK. My glass bowl broke, so it's going to be hard. If we get to between 1% and 5% in the first year, then I think we're on our way.
Two things. On the resolver side, that all ISPs actually enable validation. On the authority side, that anyone who wants to get their domain signed can do it at no extra cost. That would determine success for me. I think it's going to happen before IPv6.
A number of years ago, I was involved in writing a plan for DNSSEC deployment, and we addressed this exact question. And what we declared as our end objective that we wanted to get to was that every DNS query anywhere sent in the Internet would be capable of being validated when the answer returned. And that's an awfully high goal. Personally, I don't think that we'll ever get quite there, but the measure of when the real oddball out is something that is not validated or is not capable of being validated, that really declares success. What would be my wild prognostication on how far out that would be? Between 5 and 10 years. And I really do believe that eventually the validation needs to move to the end system in some manner.
Let me answer the question with a slightly different spin. I think DNSSEC deployment will be successful when we get a number of new and interesting uses for DNS that require DNSSEC. That is, when people feel confident enough in DNS, secured by DNSSEC, that they're willing to put information into DNS that they know they can get back out with authenticated and know where it came from. An example of that is already in the IETF, we're starting to see people talk about putting certificates in DNS and having sort of an alternate trust path to secure SSL. And that's just an example of the kind of things that DNSSEC is going to facilitate. I think the first thing that everybody is thinking about now in the early days is, you know, we're going to put the brakes on spoofing, and that's going to be the first thing. And I think DNSSEC is going to help us do that. But I think in the long term, when the history is written, we'll look back and say, wow, look at what DNSSEC enabled us to do with DNS.
I think just to put a slightly different spin again on it, with my IT director hat on for a minute, it feels a lot. DNSSEC feels a bit like the operating system debate. You know, a lot of businesses stayed sitting on Windows XP for a long, long time because they weren't quite sure about Windows Vista, and they weren't quite sure about Windows 7. And there's still a lot of businesses running Windows XP, but there's going to come a point where all of a sudden everyone's talking about Windows 7 so much, or whatever the next thing is, that they will roll to that operating system, and Windows XP will slowly die out. I think DNSSEC will feel very much the same. We'll get to a point where, at the moment, a lot of folk are sitting back, waiting for .com to be signed, waiting for co.uk to be signed, in our case. And I think once that has happened, we'll suddenly see a move and a shift. So I'm not going to try and predict when we'll be 100% successful, but I think within the next 18 months to 2 to 3 years, we'll see a significant change.
Okay, so we have time is over, but we have time for a very, very last question.
It's not exactly a question. It's a comment on what you said. The characteristic of Windows XP and Windows 7 is that there's a vast investment in applications qualified against the Windows XP binary. I doubt there's the same investment with the same inflexibility going on here. And if you know any more about that, by all means answer, but it's speculation.
Absolutely, it's an analogy, and it absolutely right. But I think you've got a lot of folks sitting back, waiting to see, just like you did with XP. And I agree, there was the application issue, but it was safe, it was stable, it did a really good job, and it was pretty quick. And the new guy on the block, Windows Vista and Windows 7, was I'm not so sure about it. Does it run so well? It seems to hold my machine. Exactly the same kind of things being said about DNSSEC. It's a bit risky. I'm a bit worried. It seems very complicated. And so for me, I think you'll get to that point where all of a sudden so many people are talking about DNSSEC as a good thing that we'll see a shift towards that, and people will start to overcome those barriers.
Windows 7 does have DNSSEC capability in the Microsoft servers and if you use their networking environment.
And that's the final word. So thank you very much. Thank you all the distinguished panelists. They did a great job, and although we are finishing, they will stay here so you can ask them and discuss all the issues later with them. So thank you very much.